This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We have spent a lot of time in the last several months keeping up with the Oregon State Legislature, talking to local lawmakers, folks whose districts represent parts or all of Douglas County, and talking to some of the other people involved as well at the leadership level. We have House Republican Leader Christine Drazen on with us this afternoon. Christine, thanks for being here.
Kyle, thanks for having me.
So overall, from your perspective, how successful was this session of the Oregon State Legislature?
There is no doubt that it ended well from our perspective, from my perspective. The fact that the supermajority wanted to ram through the largest tax increase in Oregon's history when it was not needed, and it really, really wasn't something that Oregonians could afford. The fact that we were able to stop that tax measure is really important to Oregonians to be able to continue to control the cost of living here. It's already so expensive to live in Oregon. That just would have made it just more painful at the pump and, you know, more painful sort of to be nickeled and dimed as you're living your life here. So I'm pleased that we were able to stop that. But the thing that we should, you know, continue to look out for is what comes next. The governor has talked an awful lot recently about calling in a special session to try to take another run at tax increases for the Department of Transportation. And Republicans proposed legislation that would have balanced that budget without tax increases. We believe it's possible to hold on to staff, not give people pink slips, but to be able to redirect some of the funding that that agency already gets and they're spending on programs that are not core to their mission as a transportation department, and make sure that you balance. But just like families, you got to use your budget for your priorities. You can't always pay for everything you want. Sometimes you got to cover the things that you need. And the legislature and the governor have not yet come to grips with that. And instead of doing the right thing and balancing that budget carefully, the governor's talking right now about cutting staff. I think that would be a short-sighted move on her part, and I would hope that she would find other ways to help balance that budget. But right now she's talking about special session, and I think if she does that, Oregonians should pay special attention again to see how much they want to increase taxes, because guaranteed that will be their solution, even though it doesn't have to be.
Along with the transportation package battle, what were some other toughest battles for the GOP?
We fought against more sort of aggressive political agendas that, again, would make it harder for businesses to operate in our state and make it harder for people to afford to live here. They had a regulatory standard, which was called the Clean Trucks Act, and that rule would have meant that, you know, for folks that are that have an RV, or for folks that are running a business that uses dump trucks, for any of that heavier, larger, any of those heavier, larger vehicles, they were setting standards that couldn't be met. And so there was going to be no way for them to be able to purchase new vehicles in that category. And it even would have reached down into, you know, your F-350s. And there weren't alternatives on the market for the standards that they were putting in place. And we were able to push back against that and get that paused. I think that's really important for Oregonians. We definitely fought the fight on schools and in defense of girls' sports to ensure that girls have the ability to compete against other women and girls, and to be able to compete fairly, have a fair competition out there. And we will continue to advocate for girls and girls' sports and to lower the cost of living across the board. We did not make the kind of progress we could have together on education and schools. There was a missed opportunity there. There is some progress that was made for testing and for a focus on absenteeism. I think that was very bipartisan, and I'm very pleased to see that stuff moved. I think that will help our schools. I think it will help our students when we put a new focus back on how important it is to be in the classroom after, you know, a year and a half of being gone in COVID. Our students just have not all entirely come back to the classroom. So we have some of the highest absentee rates in the nation for our students, and we need to make real effort to change that culture. And then we had legislation this year to support that. I think that's super positive, and I'm pleased to have been a part of that conversation. But we talked a lot about housing and didn't seem to do anything to really help lower the cost of housing for people that want to be first-time home buyers, though they did continue to spend an awful lot of money to build public housing. So we're going to see more and more public housing go up across the state, but we will not necessarily see first-time home buyers have more opportunities to get into that first step of their journey.
Did it seem to you like some of the public housing projects tend to come at a pretty high price when you back down and say, you know, to take it down to a per unit basis?
Yeah, we had a lot of data on that. We took a very close look at what that public housing is actually costing people. And the lowest cost unit was around $225,000, $250,000 a unit. And it would go all the way up to north of $700,000 per unit for public housing. And, you know, we're talking about a couple thousand dollars for a light fixture. The price on some of the individual items that were put into these public housing units, in some cases, aren't things that you would put into your own home. And so there was a sense that they were not managing the funds well, and that there was just so much money being poured into this that they could build whatever kind of standard home that they chose. And I think that is, frankly, abusing public dollars. And it should have had standards that prevented that from happening, but our housing agency did not have those standards, and people were just spending money hand over fist.
Does it sound like some of the stories we especially used to in the past, maybe still currently, hear about the military sometimes, the $500 hammer and things like that?
Yeah, that was what we discovered. We discovered that there's no accountability standards for how these housing units are built and what materials are used, and it is the kind of level of spending that it really would make your head spin. I mean, the state has spent billions and billions of dollars on public housing across the state at this point. And without limitations on what they can build and what materials they can use and how much they can spend per door, the developers are, frankly, in some cases, not using their best judgment for what these projects have come out as far as cost is concerned. So there needs to be much more accountability in that program. Oregonians are going to end up paying over $1 billion just in debt service on these programs for the next 30 years. And at the end of it, the state doesn't own any of it. It's all private ownership. So the state's paying for it. We are funding it. We're paying the debt service for it. But in the end, we're not going to own these housing units. We're going to keep, they are required to be public housing for purposes of payment and for purposes of who can live there. But at the end, that asset is going to be owned by the developer that built it, or whatever asset group put that on the ground. The state is financing it, though, and so it is public money, and at the end of it, we will not have an asset.
There's been a lot of discussion about land use tied into housing policy as well. Do you feel like we still have a ways to go in getting a good pathway to protect agriculture land, but also get more houses in place, whether it's urban or rural areas?
Yeah, the governor's legislation this session, I think, is really going to harm the character of our neighborhoods and the character of our local communities. And it's gone so much further than just prohibiting single-family zoning. She's at the point now where we can anticipate that everything will begin to look and feel like you're in, you know, Beaverton, Tannisborn, sort of elbow to elbow in where they can put new housing units, and still doing carve outs and exceptions instead of having a larger conversation about how do we identify areas that we can build homes. And we can balance and protect our agricultural interests in our state. We're a natural resource-based state, and we should always be that. We should value that. We should welcome that. We should sustain and support ag across our state. And at the same time, we need to figure out where people can live here. But to just simply double down on public housing, to not really create new opportunities for direct private sector home ownership, and to continue to carve up our ag communities and our ag lands, it's poor leadership. I think it just comes down to this idea that there's not clarity around what our values are as Oregonians. And I think that we need to establish that clarity. We need to have that conversation with Oregonians and say, you know, do you want to protect this farmland? If the answer is yes, then we need to figure out how to do that while we create opportunity for people to ensure that there's some place for folks to live and that they can afford to live here. We've got to balance those interests. Instead, we've just seen exceptions. The legislature is constantly moving bills forward that create exceptions to our land use system rather than fixing it. And so right now they passed a bill that allows for residential care treatment to be supersided in communities across our state, which goes around our land use process, and it'll go in industrial areas likely. And that is not how our land use system works. So supersiding puts in these residential facilities without the traditional processes. And we're talking about being responsive to the aid and assist population and to the civil commitment population. And we need more beds for those populations, but our land use system, they've done a runaround, a workaround from the land use system for where they're going to site those facilities. And that means that our system's broken. If you need to do something that is for the public good, but you can't operate within the existing system for the state, but private folks have to operate within that system, but the state can carve itself out, then if you can't live within that system, then the system is fixed. And that is not the thing that's happening. They're just giving themselves exceptions.
Well, we're clearly behind when it comes to the number of units needed for housing. One of the other questions that comes up in that conversation is, how are we doing on population growth or exit? I haven't heard any data in a while. Oftentimes it is tied more to the census every 10 years. But do we know whether more people are still coming to Oregon, or are people leaving, or where are we at there?
Yeah, we have a flat population at best. Some of the numbers have shown that we have had a decline, and, you know, whether or not you're looking at numbers that are the Census Bureau or whether or not you're looking at numbers that are Portland State, those do not always exactly line up in these kind of interim check-ins, these quarterly check-ins. And so, but what we have seen is we certainly haven't grown. I think that consensus is we are not growing anymore as a state. And when you talk to folks that share information with us on demographics, they always say demographics are destiny, and that when we don't see population growth, we can anticipate our economy is going to soften. Our economy isn't going to grow as much. And so right now we have our largest population growth is in our aging population and folks that are entering into retirement age. Our smallest cohort are school-age kids. And that continues to be a struggle for our state. We are one of the lowest birth rate states in the nation. And so, you know, folks aren't building their families here, and folks aren't moving here with young kids. We have an older population, and that will absolutely affect what kind of housing we need. And it will also affect our economy and our ability to support core functions of government moving ahead.
A few weeks ago, Dutch Bros Coffee out of Grants Pass announced they were moving their corporate offices out of state. A lot of reasons for that tied with their eastward expansion. But are you concerned with a company as large as they have become, while they maintain their coffee stands around Oregon, moving their corporate headquarters elsewhere? Is this a harbinger of the business-friendly or lack of business-friendly way that state government looks at business?
Yeah, it's an indictment of leadership in our state, of our regulatory environment, our tax environment. When we have a homegrown success story that's as deeply rooted as Dutch Bros, picking up and, you know, and leaving town and heading for Arizona, or, wherever some of these folks go, I know that I routinely get calls and emails and text messages from businesses that let me know that they've had to make the difficult decision to grow and expand in other states, or they've made the difficult decision to move their headquarters elsewhere. Portland in particular is shedding you know, the economic drivers that make an urban center successful, whether or not those are kind of high net worth individuals that choose to live there or the individuals who have started and operated businesses in Multnomah County or Portland or the metro area generally. Like, and, you know, if they pick up and if when they pick up and leave, it affects the entire state. And somebody like Dutch Bros to leave Oregon, like that is incredible to me and so sad. And it is such an indictment of the approach that Oregon has taken, where we don't welcome business. We aren't open for business. We are all session long. They were constantly looking at ways to add to the regulatory environment. They were constantly looking at ways to add to the cost of living. It wasn't just the transportation package. If you are engaged in business in the state of Oregon, your fees, the cost of doing business when you are interacting with any Oregon agencies, all of those costs are going up in the future based on the increased expenses that they put on you in this last legislative session. It seemed to be an insatiable appetite for the government to grow and for them to be determined for our economic opportunity and for our businesses to shrink. When we talked to our state economists, they talked about which sectors of our government were growing, economy were growing. And the sectors of our economy that were growing were healthcare and private education and basically government services as well. And it what was really cratering was manufacturing. What was cratering was was private sector economy. And that is not a good sign. That is not a stable, strong foundation for the economy to build and grow on.
And what explain maybe more about your role as House Republican leader. What's involved there?
I am the voice of the House Republican Caucus. On behalf of the elected leaders across the state who have identified as Republicans and run as Republicans, I have the privilege and the opportunity to help identify what our agenda is through session and to help advance that agenda in a unified way throughout that legislative session. And House Republicans were committed this session to standing up for Oregonians who are frustrated and overburdened by the cost of living and by the regulatory environment in the state of Oregon. We stood on behalf of Oregonians who want lower taxes, who want better schools, who want to reunite families and to not allow for tent cities across our state. We stood with Oregonians who wanted a better way forward to build private homes and not just approach our housing crisis like it's strictly for public housing only. Those were just at a very basic level. We were deeply committed to standing in the gap for Oregonians' top priorities.
And as you look at the session and everything, are there things there that just didn't get acted upon at all that you would like to tackle in the near future?
We believe that there must be a path forward to lower the cost of living for Oregonians, and that will require choices at the government level where we stop being all things to all people. We have legislative leadership right now that thinks that there is no end to what government should do on your behalf, that government should tell you how to raise your kids, that government should be wall-to-wall public housing, that government should be, wall-to-wall regulatory standards for what kind of siding you use on your house, what your roof is like, whether or not you can have a well. And if you have a well, they want to start to meter it and charge you for your water. We're talking about an aggressive approach to what it is like to live here that House Republicans believe we have got to reverse. We had legislation this session that stood up for crime victims, in particular victims of sexual assault. We had legislation this session that lowered the cost of living, both directly in property taxes and specifically for our seniors across our state. And then we also had legislation which would have addressed our housing crisis by reducing regulations and lowering the tax burden for those that are engaged in producing the kind of housing that is private sector housing in our state. We've got to be business friendly, and we believe that there's a way forward to do that. We repealed the wildfire maps this session, which I'm very happy to have done. We found funding for wildfire mediation and suppression in our state, and for the first time established ongoing funding for wildfire costs. I think that's very, very important to our state moving forward. We're anxious to work with our federal partners for them to begin to manage our federal forests in a way that is an asset, not a liability to our state. We believe our forests are an asset. We've got to stop letting them burn. We have got to manage them rather than watching them go up in smoke every summer. And House Republicans led on those issues this session, and we have to continue to make progress there. But I think it was a good session on those issues for Oregonians.
Do you feel like with some of the changes that have come out of the federal administration that you'll get some assistance in moving forestry in the direction that you'd like to see it go?
I think it is absolutely such an incredible opportunity for a state like Oregon. It's, 60% public ownership of our forest lands here. And we have an opportunity right now as they're looking at, as they're amending the Northwest Forest Plan, to be able to get to engage with the federal administration with the kinds of policies that allow for active management of our forests. And I think that this administration is open to that. I think it's an opportunity that we're going to have to continue to work on. We need to be persistent, and we need to keep our eye on the ball here, because this opportunity is not going to come around again and again and again. We have got to take advantage of it while it's here.
What are your future plans looking ahead over the next couple of years?
It's a privilege to serve my community, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to serve again as a House Republican leader. And, I am focused on, this role and this opportunity to serve, and just really grateful to do everything I can to improve the quality of life for our state.
All right, House Republican Leader Christine Drazen, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.